from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Welcome back into the Insiders. I am James Hamm. Joining me today is Kings legend Jerry Reynolds. Jerry, what's going on?
Well, James, not much. Just glad to be with you. Obviously, enjoy your work. I've certainly been a fan of yours for a while. You know, having driving down talking hoops like we did for a couple of years. So, keep doing what you do.
I'm missing our stops at Wendy's for chili.
Yeah, that was kind of one of the highlights. actually, for me, going to anything and getting away from San Francisco is a highlight.
I agree 100%. Certainly, I don't even want to drive my car down there anymore after over my experience there going to NBC and having my door kicked in and weird stuff happen all the time. We had some crazy stuff happen last night in the NBA, like not Kings related, but I think it speaks to a slightly larger thing that's going on right now in the league. And that's we had Joel Embiid go for 70 and 18. And then we had Karl Anthony Towns go for 62 and a loss. Is there just no defense being played at all, Jerry? Because that's what it feels like.
Well, you know, there's not much, and I'm not sure you're allowed to play defense. That's also, but you know, all the breaks go to the offensive players. You know, where, you know, guys can drive into defenders and they create contact and they get the foul. You know, poor defenders can stand there and go straight up, and maybe if they twitch a little bit or move an arm forward slightly, it's a foul on them, and that's ridiculous. Of course, yeah, it's. Just studying the history of the game, I'd always say, you know, just when I was watching it a lot as a young person, in the 60s and 70s, it was similar to this, except there wasn't a three-point shot, but it was all offense. And you had those exaggerated numbers, you know, guys getting 50 rebounds and this, that, and the other, because there's a lot of rebounds to get and high scores. And then, you know, by the early 80s and 90s, defense, you know, got a lot more physical. They took away a lot of things that offensive players can do. To win, if you got 100 points, you're probably going to win. And now we're back, I think, to where you're starting to see the exaggerated stats a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, last year the Sacramento Kings were incredible offensively. They set the record for offensive rating, 118.6. There's now like six teams above that this season. Mm-hmm. And so that tells you that either – the Kings figured something out in the league and everybody copied them, or more teams are now not playing defense. And to me, like, it's weird that we were talking about it. The Kings defense this year versus last year, defensive rating, they're almost identical. It's like 116. Last year, they're 25th. This year, they're 17th. And it speaks to a larger trend in the league of the hyper-focus on offense, you know, led by guys like Joel Embiid, but also guys like Tyrese Halliburton, who is just playing out of his mind in Indiana, setting up everybody, but with a team that plays very little defense and just is hyper-focused on the offensive end. Like, do you think you can still win in this league being just a defensive-minded defensive-minded team?
No, I don't. I mean, I think, you know, and of course, I never have. I mean, I think defense is always, back in the 80s, 90s, is more important probably than it is now. But I've always said that if you look up you know, in the rafters of the arenas, you'll see a scoreboard. They don't call it a defensive board. And inevitably, the team with the most points on that board always wins. So defense means you don't have to score as much, but you still have to score more. And so offense is, in my mind, is always more important and just what it is. But, I mean, I think it is, especially in today's league, if you can't go out and get 120, you probably aren't going to be competing for much most nights. And then, of course, I think you can even take it a step further. You really got to have that one guy probably on any contender that can average close to 30, you know, and that, so that's some differences there. I enjoy the game, but I think, too, to your earlier point, I think one of the reasons teams are scoring more is, and I think they have taken a page from Golden State, Sacramento, is that shooting the three in transition. Mm. Tough shot to guard. If you want to throw it ahead and push it up and shoot threes in transition, it's hard to get to those guys. And of course, guys making them. You know, I mean, it's been a number of years now to where young guys coming up through the ranks, I mean, they focus on the three-point shot. So that's become such a staple, in my mind, too much of one. But still, you know, every team almost plays the same. You know, push it up in transition, shoot the three, go into the screen and roll, or draw and kick. You know, pretty much every night, every team.
Is it strange to you as a guy who coached, where you're not calling any plays because the game is so fast now?
Yeah.
That, like, there's already, like, if you're going to call a play, there's already like three plays that have already happened. Mm-hmm. Like, there's our, what you're talking about, the transition three. I mean, you can literally see a team grab a rebound, hit an outlet pass, hit a guy who's already run to the corner, who's already released it, and there's 21 seconds on the clock as he's firing.
Yeah.
There's no time to, I mean, like, all of your coaching has to be done well before the game, and has to, like, it's just an identity that you have in a game, as opposed to, you know, again, like calling specific play sets or things that might actually impact the game, like in the middle of the action.
Yeah, no, I think that's a terrific point. You know, I said last year I thought I would never see a team being efficient offensively after made baskets.
Oh yeah,
I always said that shouldn't be possible. Because, you know, they've got four guys on offense. You got one guy taking it out, and you got five defenders running back. But the Kings did a marvelous job doing that. Now, having said that, I think teams are onto them a little bit. They've taken some of that away. The Kings are playing in the half court more this year than they did last year. Seems just the eye test. And it's, you know, scouting is scouting. I've always said the NBA team scout. They have actually some bright people that do that. And I think, you know, trying to take away a few things that teams, where I sank last year, just caught people by surprise a little bit. But, you know, the other thing, I think going back a little bit to old school, and whether you'd agree or not, but I am convinced, have been convinced for a while, I'm more convinced today, that in crunch time, you need some set plays and some real structure, because for a couple of reasons, I think the game gets more physical. The refs kind of swallow the whistles a little bit, and so you need to be able to get the guys shots that need to get shots. And I think, you know, you see that's how I think down the stretch of games, whether it's the Kings or another team, how leads are lost. Because you're not, you know, you're really not getting into anything particular, and they're taking you out of your free flowing game, is what I'd say.
Gotcha.
and I think you see it, and you see it in the playoffs.
Oh yeah.
Because the game's more physical, it gets harder to get shots in the, you know, kind of a free flowing, freelance style, and so. You know, in my mind, but it, you know, I love the way that they play, and I think that's more fun game to watch. But I still think, just the old school in me thinks, boy, when that last 4 or 5 minutes, you better have three or four things, need plays that you know you can run to get key guys the ball in certain positions.
Yeah, that's not like the four flat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I agree. And I think what we've seen from Mike Brown is they are peppering in some different things this year. We've seen like the horn set with De'Aaron Fox. I've seen teams blow up the horn set because they know what's coming, which I think is interesting. But his speed and quickness to get around the front group is crazy. You know, we have seen them like focus, switch and do a pick and roll heavy system, like in crunch time. And so that's where I do think that they have that. It's just that you might need to switch into that mode a little earlier some games. And I think that that's what we've kind of seen them let go of the rope a couple of times. And also, you're either blowing out teams or you're getting blown out most of this season. So it's really tough to worry about what set you're going to be in the fourth quarter when, you know, it's a 25-point game, one way or the other.
Yeah, too. I think, you know, one of the things that's been a positive and maybe even hurt him a little bit in the sense that Fox has been so terrific in fourth quarters of just creating by himself, you know, and the other guys just stepping aside. And, you know, this year I think teams here again are a little more prepared for that. And so, you know, in my mind is, well, maybe, you know, maybe you still should try to run more stuff through Domas as opposed to just having him, you know, kind of step aside and Fox go win the game for us kind of thing. Because, I mean, as good as he is, and he's a terrific young player still, one of the best, but it's when the other team knows that's what you're going to do, it gets tougher.
No, it does. And I think that, like, the way that this team is evolving is so different than what we saw last year. We'll dive into that when we come back after the break. We got tons to talk about. We got Jerry Reynolds here in studio, which is always a treat. We're going to keep diving into not only what's happening with the Kings on the court, but Jerry has all this expertise as a GM, as a coach. How do you approach a player that you know is going to get traded and he knows is going to get traded, but you still need him to play for another 10 games? So we'll have all of that next. We are the Insiders here on ESPN 1320. See you in just a minute.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Welcome back into the Insiders. I'm James Hamm. Joining me, Mr. Jerry Reynolds. Jerry, it's great to see you. I like sitting across from you, and like we need to go get coffee more and stuff.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So the Kings missed out on a couple of guys here in the last couple of weeks. We saw the Pascal Siakam trade, where he's now in Indiana. We saw the OG Anunoby trade, where he's in New York. Both of those guys seemingly were targets of the Sacramento Kings. Even the Siakam deal, like from what I know, if the Kings wanted to do the deal, they could have got that deal done. But each of those come with their own pitfalls. And so when I know the salary cap when you were a GM wasn't as big a deal, but you were still with the team and with the front office as the salary cap became this monstrous thing. Just how difficult is it to look at a player like Siakam, 29 going on 30, but you know that he wants like a five-year, $250 million extension, and you already have a couple of guys on your team that make a lot of money and are going to want to make even more money in De'Aaron Fox when his salary comes up. And then you got, you know, Keegan Murray and you got Malik Monk. And like, how big of a picture do you have to look at when you're going to a trade, especially when it comes to like a free agent that's going to want a bunch of money down the road? And just how difficult is that decision to lay it all out there and know what's going to happen 5 years from now or 3 years from now?
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing. Of course, you can't know 3 or 4 years from now, and you sign those deals. And I think, too, I mean, basically, you know, the risk of going having to go into luxuries to sign your, you know, basically your own free agent once you've traded, it changes things. Then you're really locked in. Mm-hmm. And how much better is he for sure going to make you? You know, there's that risk. I mean, not saying, you know, they're good players. You know that.
Yeah.
But do they actually mean more wins or just a different guy getting stats? There's always a concern there, you know. And in a lot of cases, I mean, quite honestly, probably a third to a half of the owners in the league, you know, really aren't going to go into the luxury tax regardless.
Yeah, I know. You know, the Warriors are paying $186 million in luxury taxes.
Yeah, you know that's not going to go forward very well.
No.
Because, I mean, at some point, you know, paying $180 million extra for a team is basically 500 team maybe. And so those are all those concerns. And of course I was situated for years, or we were, where there wasn't even a chance to get to the cap, but which is another, but we'll talk about that another day. But I think this ownership, obviously they would pay the money if they thought it was worth it. I believe that, I can see why they would have done, say, a Siakam. I like Siakam a lot as a player. I think he'd have been a good fit, but I don't see him as a $50 million player either. I just don't.
Yeah, if he wanted a 5 year, $150-$160, and you're risking, you know, that you're paying a 35-year-old, 34-year-old Siakam like $35-$34 million down the road, okay. But that's not what he's talking about.
And no.
As soon as he said max.
Yeah, like, well, everybody averages over 15 points a game in the NBA now. Over 2 years as a max player, I think. I mean, the idea was the max players was the Embiids and the Jokic's and guys like that, LeBron James. And now it's, you know, pretty much anybody's had maybe made an all-star team once and averages in double figures.
No, that's crazy because I know like the Kings are attached to other players, a guy like Zach LaVine,
yeah,
right, who is making max money. You know, there's a point where he will make $50 million, and we're talking about a guy who blew out his knee as a young player. We're talking about a guy who isn't known for playing defense, and you know, who's known for his athleticism, which eventually with some of these guys, especially who have had knee injuries, goes away. And you have to be so cautious with who you are looking at and how you structure your team and how that will impact things, and then whether you can still sign a Malik Monk or whether you can extend a Keegan Murray when it's time for him to get paid. And so I think it's like super complex when you're breaking all of it down. Is there anyone right now that you're looking at and you're thinking, if I were the Kings, this is sort of where I would go? I mean, we know the standard names that are out there that may or may not be available. And then we also know that there's another list of names that we haven't got that are available that teams aren't telling, that aren't letting it get out that they're available. But is there someone that you would go chase if you were the Kings?
Well, there's two guys I think I would, that there's some rumors on. You don't know what's true, but Herb Jones from the Pelicans, you know, I think he would be a really good fit. because of his defense. And then maybe the best fit, and you know, he hadn't done a lot yet. He's a young player. But I think the Kings are going to have to look more in that direction of finding a guy that really could be a developmental guy. I always said, as you know, a few years ago, I was really a big Bobby Portis guy. I said, they ought to go after this guy. And then last year is Naz Reid. And my guy this year is Jalen Smith from Indiana.
Oh,
okay. Lively, young guy that can make threes, can block shots. I mean, be a perfect fit with Sabonis in my mind. And you know, a guy like that. And might be available because Indiana's got the added Siakam.
Mm-hmm.
And they've really got more players than they can play.
That's an interesting player. I hadn't thought of Jalen Smith. I mean, he played here in Sacramento last week. Mm-hmm. He actually, I'm almost positive, he got sick and was throwing up in a trash can right next to their bench, like during the game. Mm-hmm. They had two players that had situations in that game. Isaiah Jackson got a concussion somehow in that game, which I don't even still know mm-hmm. how he got a concussion. He's been out the last couple of games, but you saw him like kind of, and then leave and came back and got a trainer and went back, and he's been out. And then Jalen Smith. I like Jalen Smith. I liked him coming into the draft. He's one of those guys that had a really, really nice 3-point shot mm-hmm. coming into the draft, and then but went way too high. So mm-hmm. expectations kind of killed his early career, especially when you look at him as a number 10 pick and Tyrese Halliburton is two picks later.
Mm-hmm.
And just think what the Phoenix Suns would look right now with Tyrese Halliburton alongside, you know, Devin Booker and Kevin Durant and all those guys. I mean, you could see how that, especially if he could have been an understudy behind Chris Paul at the time, that's what it would have been.
You know, how would the Warriors look instead of James Wiseman?
No, that's true. That's true. But you would still have Clay, like, thinking that he's still Clay, and so who would play and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but that's an interesting name. So Jalen Smith. We talked about this a little bit on the way to the break, and I love Herb Jones as well.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think that, I mean, they're trying to improve their team,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think that there's a match where the Kings can actually get in on a trade for Herb.
Yeah, I'd be surprised too, don't get me wrong. I mean, I think, you know, Herb, I'd even, Trey Murphy I like a lot.
Yeah.
Differently, because he's a shot maker, long wing that can really, really, he's going to make shots.
They've done a nice job of finding those guys.
They have. They really have. And
yeah.
And I think Willie Green's done a really nice job, coached them up. You know, it's their only issues have always been injuries.
Yeah.
You know, keeping Ingram and Zion on the floor, Valanciunas, CJ. I mean, if they ever can keep together for 30 straight games, I mean, they could be about as good as anybody.
No, that's true. I mean, I think the Kings have seen it all season long. So mm-hmm. Whatever it is that they've got, the Kings don't have. And mm-hmm. and that's, again, if you're the Pelicans, I have a hard time believing that they're going to trade with a team like the Kings, who is in the same conference, who is around the same level of play. Yeah. And then if you make the mistake and give them the piece that they were missing, then you're going to pay for it. And,
yeah.
You know, the last thing you want if you're them is to have to play Herb Jones in a first round or a second round series.
Yeah, and I don't even know who they're missing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a clue necessarily what piece they're looking for. I mean, to me, it's like anything. You identify guys that you think would fit you and then make a run at them. And the worst they can do is say no.
Yep.
And then you say, well, thank you very much. We'll we'll call some the next call. You know,
that's
just,
right.
You know, you can't get your feeling. It's not like trying to get a date when you're in junior high school. You know, you don't get your feelings hurt. You just move on.
You just move on. You bring up, okay, so the Kings are in this weird situation where I think we all can see their needs, but in your opinion, what is their biggest need? What is it that, again, not maybe a player, but a player type that you would be going all in on or really trying to chase, whether it's at this deadline or this summer?
Well, I think there's two. You know, if you could get one of a type, a wing that can guard a couple of positions, a long athletic wing, guard twos and threes, let's say,
mm-hmm.
and then a power guy that could guard fours and fives, an athletic guy, preferably one that could stretch the floor as well. So I think there's two things there. I mean, you know, if you could just address one, And at the trade deadline, that'd be terrific. I don't think it's possible. And then maybe somehow get the other one addressed in the off season, as well as keep, you know, your core that you want to keep.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We're going to continue this discussion after the break. When we come back, we're going to look into sort of the dynamics of what it takes to add talent during the season, and how much disruptive, like sort of a force that can be within a locker room and with a team. So we're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We'll be back in just a minute.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
No Kyle this week, but we do have Kings legend Jerry Reynolds in the house. Jerry, how are you?
Great.
We're holding up?
I think so. I think I can make it now. I've got my second wind.
The stool's comfortable. Yeah, we're ready to roll. You've been part of some major in-season trades in the past. Mm-hmm. How hard is it, like, in those situations where, you know, you do have some players who don't want to go, who want nothing more than to be part of a franchise that's building something, or they like where they're living, or, you know, they got a girlfriend there or whatever. Like, how hard is it when you, when you're entering this phase of the season and you're like, man, I've got to pull this guy aside and really have this hard discussion with him?
Well, it is a difficult thing because, you know, as a fan, you always think, well, just trade this guy for that guy. You don't see them as, you know, they got families, they got a place, change places. There's a lot of issues there. What I've always done, and I always recall, you know, different times they merge out about trades, and so a lot of times if it wasn't to it, I'd go to guys and say, look, this isn't true, you know. If there's ever something, that I'll come to you and tell you. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there are times when, okay, there's a rumors and stuff. And I'll say, yes, you know, because maybe a player or his agent will say, what's going on here? And I say, yeah, we are looking into a deal. Obviously, if it's a deal that's good for us and we hope good for you and your client, we'll do it. That's our job. But you know, we'll keep you informed, and we expect you to keep, you know, privacy about it, which is asking an agent to be private is might as well be asking my wife, you know, to not say something. But
throwing Dodie under the bus right here.
Yeah. I just always said, I think, you know, honesty is the best policy. Be truthful. You know, and just tell guys and remind them that it's very few players get to play with one team their entire career. Mm-hmm. Only the greats, usually, and everybody else has to establish value for the team they're on and the league they're in. In other words, I mean, you look at Sabonis; it's his third team. Harrison Barnes is third team. Kevin Herter's second team. Malik Monk's third team. Mm-hmm. That's the reality,
yeah,
of how this league is.
I think Malik said it the other day. He's like, no, this isn't stressful. He's like, I was out of the league at one point. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, you were. That's interesting. Like, sort of the reality check of, like, how your career is usually hanging by a thread until it's not.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of guys, have you ever had, like, I know I used to hire and fire people all the time for years working retail, and like I've fired a lot of people, and you never know how someone's gonna like react. Have you ever had like a very, very bad reaction, whether it's emotion or whether it's like anger or a player just break down on you in the middle of one of these?
Yeah, you know, on as far as waving a player, I always remember at the time, I think, because I'd taken over for Bill Russell, and but he had basically signed the guy, Ben Guillory, who wasn't a very good player out of Georgetown because I think his friendship with John Thompson. But then, you know, basically I just felt I was in a position, you know, we got to waive him because he's not very good and we're not very good and we'd like to get somebody at least belongs in the league, mm-hmm. you know, at minimum. And so, you know, I told him, I said, we're going to have to waive you and I certainly hope you can get picked up with somebody. I didn't think that he would, which he didn't. And he took it really hard. It's sad because, you know, I think he knew that.
Yeah.
That's the worst part. You're really taking a guy, you know, out of a league that maybe shouldn't have. He's just not good enough to be in it. I mean, he was lucky to get the opportunity.
And yeah.
But at some point, it's, you know, like I say, it's not little league. It's professional. You don't have an obligation to try to get the best team you can,
yeah.
And that's going to hurt some feelings. Just like with players playing, who you play is going to hurt some feelings. You know, that's the reality.
Yeah. Have you had, as you're building up to a trade deadline, just like you can visibly see someone just is not handling it? Like, because I remember here in Sacramento, the guy that always comes to my mind is Marcus Thornton. Like Marcus Thornton, like the 2 weeks leading up to a trade deadline, couldn't hit a shot.
Uh-huh.
As soon as the deadline was over, 30 points a game. Mm-hmm. Like, but you could see the stress. You could see, and he's not even being mentioned anywhere, but you could just see the anxiety of it. You can see, you know, like just the panic and the like not even knowing how to talk, not even like not knowing how to express themselves. But how have you seen it impact a team as you're getting towards the deadline?
Well, it does. I mean, I think deadline affects all teams because there's always rumors about every team, mm-hmm. and certain players and you know, teammates, you know, even though they're not being rumored, sometimes that's their best friend. You know, as you pointed out, of Marcus Thornton, and each situation is a little different. Like a, you know, Marcus Little Buckets, as we call him.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, this was, you know, Sacramento had been by far the best situation he'd ever been in.
Yes.
And, you know, had gotten a chance to play a lot. It you know, increased his value a lot. So he knew that. But it's also true the Kings knew that his value might be higher than it's ever going to be again. And so that creates its own dynamic. But, yeah, there's no doubt. This is, you know, always a relief, I think, when trade deadline passes, mm-hmm. for every team. Now, you know, that because there's always certain guys that are involved directly, but even the periphery guys, it's like, well, yeah, that's my buddy I hang out with, and he goes to Charlotte. Well, that's not my – I can't hang out with my best buddy again, you know,
yeah.
type thing.
I even – like I've talked about this a little bit here on the show. I think there's a dynamic with – Harrison Barnes and De'Aaron Fox that people just overlook.
Mm-hmm.
Like De'Aaron Fox that's been his veteran his whole career, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Barnes got traded, I think, the back end of his rookie season.
Yeah, the second half of the rookie season, right.
Now. Yeah, and so you basically have had Barnes with you every step of the way, but I think Barnes is one of those players who doesn't just, you know, teach you how to be a good pro. He's a guy who lives a certain way, who you know, interacts with the community a certain way, who presents himself in front of the media a certain way. And so you've had this whole entire career of having this professional, you know, beacon to look up to next to you, and the lockers right next to each other. I think it can be like super emotional for a player to know, like, not only is it, you see the stress that your buddy's going through, but you're also feeling it too, like the potential loss. And I know you can still be friends. You can still pick up a phone. You can still FaceTime or whatever, but it's different when you're part of a locker room, which is more like a family, right?
Yeah, and traveling, you know, in a lot of cases, same guys sit next to one another on the plane, on the bus. You know, there's a real dynamic there. You know, I was just, even in the broadcasting part, you know, I always, Gary Gerald and I would sit to get, you know, there's just simply a dynamic there that, you know, that was, you know, that fit. I mean, you make a good point about Harrison. I think we all forget a little bit, you know, just his level of professionalism and comfort in the locker room and coachability, all those things. You know, we want different things sometimes on the floor, but you couldn't ask for anything better off the floor. And I've always called him, you know, the kind of the 2020 version of Eddie Johnson, who was for the older fans would remember Eddie, a pro's pro, class guy, just everybody respected, on your team and yeah. Had all those same things, a good player that coachable, locker room pro, really mentored young guys.
Now he's a really good broadcaster.
And great broadcaster.
Yeah. We have breaking news. It just happened. Adrian Griffin was just fired as the Bucks head coach.
Ooh, surprising. Well, I'll say this. There was no reason to fire the guy they fired. That was one of the Mike Budenholzer. All he did was they had the best record in the league last year. They lost in the playoffs because their star, Adetokounmpo, was hurt. I mean, it's like good grief, and he'd won a championship for you.
After not winning for many years. Decades.
It's kind of a set of new owners. It's basically, kind of like, good grief, guys. Take a step back and don't do what somebody that writes into the paper tells you to do.
It's interesting, too, because we're shifting gears here just a little bit just to talk about this as it's happening. They have the second best record in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
This wasn't about wins and losses. This was about personalities behind the scenes. And we saw that early on. I mean, Terry Stotts quit right away, was not comfortable with what was happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this puts a really, really good team in a strange spot.
Yeah. You wonder. I mean, I can't imagine that happened without Adetokounmpo being on board.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you did just get him his money. So
yeah.
He's there no matter what.
Yeah, no, I mean, but I mean, with Giannis, I mean, obviously the franchise player and one of the, the best, if not best player in the world. I mean, he's among them.
Yeah.
So, I can't imagine any franchise doing something like that without, at least knowing it would be accepted by their star, if not approved.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to go back to Kingstock here. One of those broad questions, right? If you're the Kings right now, and I think we kind of know where they are. They're probably better than a 7 seed. They're probably more like 4, 5, 6 still. And they'll probably figure out their way along the way. Now, they could collapse, and we never know for sure. But when you're approaching this trade deadline, I think we all can understand that it doesn't matter how good they're playing. There's still probably an ingredient or two missing from them being a true contender. So how do you approach a deadline like this where you know that you're a piece away or two, but that piece could be big. And you know that by going and making that trade, again, the Kings are about to venture out on a 7-game road trip leading up to February 5th, right? Mm-hmm. February 7th, they get back to play. The day before the trade deadline, they play Detroit. So you know that if you make a gigantic trade right here, you could totally upset the balance of the team. You could drop 6 games on the road trip because you don't have players and players are moving in and out, like chaos. How do you manage all of that? And realistically, I think the biggest question is, how do you manage knowing that in order to get to here, you might need to take a step back to here, but you need one of those substantial pieces that changes who you are?
Well, that's it in a nutshell. I mean, I will say this, probably the best time to do something like that if you want to China change is while they're on a big road trip. I think the front office has more time to really focus on that. Mm-hmm. I'd go back to the trade Kings made years ago when for Peja Stojakovic for Ron Artest in the middle of the year. Kings were really struggling. Peja was starting to have back problems, wasn't quite the same Peja. And obviously Ron had his issues in Indiana, but it was a trade that was made, and certainly there wasn't any guarantee how it's going to work. As it turned out, it made, saved the season, and team was a playoff team when at the time it was made, they clearly weren't. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I would go back to another point is the reason – kind of worked besides Ron being a really good player and good with his teammates, Rick Adelman. you know, there again, I think that's where the head coach really has an impact, you know, because they're the ones that's got to kind of oversee fitting it in.
Yeah.
And getting it right, you know, utilizing that new guy correctly. And so, you know, and some coaches are way better than others at it, you know, and I always thought, like, say, now, you know, Rick was bringing him into somewhat of a certainly a stable organization, but I thought Rick Elliman deserved a lot of credit, just like I think Mike Brown would be very good in that sort of thing.
Okay. That's an interesting thought, because you just don't know how it's going to work out. And I think when you're a team that's trying to get to a completely different level than you're on, there's going to be risk and reward and everything. When you're a part of a front office, what is that like with the coach being here, the general manager and his staff being here, your analytics staff, then you also have an ownership, like, you know, part of the conversation as well. But when you're leading up to one of these deadlines, how do you manage all of that? And, you know, a coach saying, I need X, Y, and Z, and a GM thinking, I need this, this, and this, an owner saying, I'm not sure if I want to play this, this, and this, but you have all of these, like, different orbits that you're dealing with, and then you got some really smart guys who are saying, like, these three players will fit into our system because the computer says so. But you know what I mean? Like, how do you manage all of that ego and all, because you've been on just about every side of that equation.
Yeah, well, it's rare when it does all fit, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, when you have a front office and the head coach front office and ownership all on the same page, then you got a chance to get somewhere. And I've seen it that way, and then I've seen it when it wasn't that way. But in general, I think, you know, there's two different ways to look at it. I mean, a coach, and he can't change. He has to be. He's looking for how are we going to be better tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Concern, because he knows it's about losses going forward quick. And the general manager has got to keep in mind, yeah, I'd like first, but I'm looking at the franchise longer term.
Yeah.
And so sometimes that's where, you know, a little misunderstanding. But if that's ever there, and generally speaking, the should be on the, if there is a side, it should be on the general manager's side. And then, but what you'd hope is that there's a really good relationship with coach and general manager, and they can come to understand where they're going there. Now, of course, with Jeff Petrie and Roman, that was always that way. And I think certainly it appears that way here now. But you have to have that. I mean, you know, the player, I mean, Mike would probably look at, what do we got to do to get better tomorrow? Be damned with the draft choices in 5 years. I'm not that sort of thing. But the general manager, he has to kind of look at all those kind of things. Plus, as you've pointed out, the cap implications.
Yeah.
You know, where it may actually destroy the franchise rather than it may make them better for a while. But yeah, there's a lot of thoughts. I mean, that's why it's always good when you have a lot of voices. I know with the front office now, with Wes Wilcox, and you've got experienced guys with Monty, and certainly a coaching staff. You know, they really got some competent people there that have been to the county fairs, I'd like to say. And so, you know, they should be able to kind of come to the same place, because I mean, you know, I can't believe, and I'm fairly confident, Mike Brown knows what they need. Monty McNair knows what they need. The problem is getting what you need.
No, totally. And I think it's a certain point, sometimes you do have to give a coach something that you probably don't think works, mm-hmm. but that you're like, okay, I'll let you go ahead and figure out whether it works or not. And I always think of, like, Keon Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Keon Clark was square peg in a round hole.
Oh, boy.
Like, just like, not just on the court, but off the court. But the on the court thing, he didn't have the same basketball IQ as the rest of the players on the court. He had a gift for blocking shots.
Yep.
But he didn't have a gift for all the other things that happened on that court. But you had to at least try it, right? Because at a certain point, like, hey, our defense isn't good enough. That might be what we need to get over the championship hump. And we at least have to try it. And so I think sometimes there is that tinkering, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's one of those things, again, where with Rick Adelman, I think he was so good at you know, spotting him.
Yeah.
You know, he knew who he was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he knew what he could do on the floor in spurts, you know, and he had a strong group, you know, with Vlade and high character guys, you know, that could keep things under control a little bit.
Okay. Let's see. We're getting close, not only to the end of the show, we got a few minutes left, but to the NBA trade deadline. And what would you do here? Would you make a big trade? Would you make a small trade on the peripheral that maybe swaps out a guy in your top eight, but doesn't change the dynamic of your total rotation? Where would you head?
Well, you know, I think I'd have to just approach it. Any trade I could make that makes the team better. I mean, you'd love to make a big trade that you're confident in would, you know, make the big splash that would really set you up. But sometimes you don't even have that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're always looking for that. But if you can't, I mean, if you can, you know, go get Chris Webber or Mitch Richmond or somebody that kind of, well, yeah, that's a home run. But don't be scared to just settle for a good single. You know, yeah. a nice solid piece that, you know, Darius Ungaila type guy that comes in and makes you better.
Yeah.
Or
Trey Lyles.
Or, you know, kind of a periphery kind of trade where you trade a really good player like a Hedo Turkoglu, and that's involved in getting a Brad Miller. In the long run, it probably wasn't a good move. Short run, it saved you being a quality team for two or three more years.
Yeah, yeah. That's always a dynamic, right? You're trying to, like, manage what's today and what's tomorrow. And,
right.
And you know, like I've heard you say it a million times, if you have a five-year plan in the NBA, you have no plan at all.
Right.
Right, so.
Yeah, it sounds good, but, you know, it's like trust the process. Well, yeah, trust it as long as you're getting paid and they don't care if you win in 15 games a year. But you better, at some point, I always say, I think most in today's sports, and all sports, I think, you know, probably 3 years is just about the limit where they, you know, expect real improvement.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So we've talked about, like, sort of who you would go after. What about these picks? Like, the Kings have, their 2024 is pretty much tied up. I mean, they could not be tied up if they don't make the playoffs, but they do have access to, like, the 26, the 28, the 30. How far out did you ever feel comfortable trading picks, or did you not, because you were usually the team who took in picks?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd say is that you know, you don't want to give up a lottery pick, so you want protections on that. But if, and even though you'd think, well, that's not going to be a problem going forward, well, don't think that, because it can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, teams that didn't protect picks in the past, you know, that were in the 20s, they thought, and all of a sudden they were in the fives. And so, but I guess the way I'd look at it is, I would never be too concerned about trading a pick 5 years down the road if as long as it's protected, for a couple of reasons. I'd say, you know, I'm probably not going to be there. And in my case now as a fan, I may not be here in 5 years. So if you can get something that helps you sooner, you know, because this team has a 4 or 5 year window, you probably think,
yeah,
to accomplish something. So why are you concerned about, you know, past your own window for really pushing for something?
Yeah, I think as long as you're not giving up the future after your window and you're not just selling everything out, your window, it could last eight years here.
You've
got guys that are of a certain age. You could string this thing out to 7-8 years. What you don't want to do is put yourself in a situation that gets really ugly. All right. Well, hey, we've run out of time. Jerry, thanks so much for joining me. I absolutely adore seeing you and having you here in the chair across from me.
Well, thank you. As always, I enjoyed it and love talking hoops with you in particular. And so since we can't drive to San Francisco, this, I guess, best way we can do it.
We could just drive to San Francisco and then drive back, but I'm not sure why we would do that.
No, I don't. No, I'd rather sit here and talk to you.
Yeah, that's right. All right. We are the Insiders. Kyle will be back next week. Jerry Reynolds in the hot seat today. Thanks for joining us. Again, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. D'Lo and Casey are next. Stick around.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey, and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.